So I always tell guys, well, you know, it's hard to plan a trip, but you know, if you're a local guy and wherever you live, mm-hmm. you know, try to look at the weather forecast. And if you get a weekend or something that's, it's going to storm on a Thursday, Friday, you know, try to get out that Saturday or Sunday or whatever days you have off.
Yeah.
Really exactly. will increase your odds.
I'm a big proponent in going back to the areas that you've had success, but having, like you said, having a good amount of time, and I'm not talking about a week or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. For me, I've always done a minimum of 3 months, but I like to have 6 months to a year in between stands, and I just keep rotating those.
And this is just my personal opinion. I think you mm-hmm. can overanalyze stuff to a point of you get diminishing returns by,
for sure,
you know, kind of being overcritical of your actions, you know. And we're a little bit spoiled because we can call so much different country, so you can, you know, mess up a spot and then you have 10 more spots to go call. I think if you get a coyote that's hungry and he hasn't been bothered and you're set close enough, you could play a baby crying and then he's going to come in.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primo's calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primo's product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com, use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to talk to my buddy, Craig Steele, and we're going to hear some of his predator hunting stories and hopefully be able to pick up some of those little nuances that, you know, you don't get from the traditional podcast that we do, the question podcast. It's nice, I think, to listen to somebody tell a detailed, you know, story and, you know, find out what worked for them and what doesn't work for them, you know. So what's going on, man? How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on, John. Doing good.
Absolutely. So you guys, it looks like you guys have been doing pretty good so far in the predator season.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing pretty good. Luckily, we've had a few storms, so it's kind of loosened things up a little bit. But it was a little bit tougher than normal. It was quite tough, actually. We had some rough days, but over the last few weeks, at least we had some storms, kind of got stuff moving a little bit and helped out our season. So.
Yeah, I've always done well just following inclement weather, especially on coyotes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, after 12, my theory is 12 to 48 hours after a big mm-hmm. storm system, especially windy, is the most optimal time to call. They're just moving. They've been hunkered down, and it just makes perfect sense, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, they're hungry because they haven't been able to, you know, all the stuff that they're hunting is hunkered down. So they're not you know, able to find
yep.
what they're looking for. So, yeah. You know, I've done over the years, one of my favorite times to hunt is during monsoon season for coyotes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, their fur isn't worth their shit, but every time I get like a monsoon that hits and kind of rains all night long and it's windy and shitty all night, if I get out that next morning, I can guarantee I'm going to call a coyote.
Yeah. Yeah. It's money after big storms. It really is. So many people worry about a lot of other things, but those weather conditions, they're living in it. You know what I mean?
And right.
I try to explain to guys, you know, we'll get days where during prime time, I get a lot of questions like guys will be like, well, what's the best time? You know, obviously historically November through February, you know, because it's a little bit colder in Arizona, mm-hmm. obviously in some of the northern country, it's better because, you know, stuff's, you know, all the animals, rodents and stuff that they eat are underground for the most part, hunkered down. So they have less to eat. But if you get high pressure for, you know, one of the worst times to hunt, in my opinion, is when you get high pressure for a couple weeks mm-hmm. and it's just stagnant, you know, 5 to obviously 30 mile an hour winds. Man, we've had some of our slowest days, bright, sunny days
yep.
that are consistent. Anytime you get a weather disturbance like that, especially it makes perfect sense with the monsoons, some of those storms, you know, people don't realize how strong and they are. And those animals just live out in it, especially coyotes and bobcats, you know, and fox. They don't go hunting when it's bad weather. It's just
right.
It is what it is.
You it's know, just a waste of waste of energy yeah, for them.
It is. It's 100%. So I always tell guys, well, you know, it's hard to plan a trip, but you know, if you're a local guy and wherever you live, mm-hmm. you know, try to look at the weather forecast. And if you get a weekend or something that's it's going to storm on a Thursday, Friday, you know, try to get out that Saturday or Sunday or whatever days you have off.
Yeah,
really exactly. will increase your odds.
Exactly. Yeah, and I've always played the weather. I always look at the moon, too. Moon's always been a big one for me.
I don't pay too much attention to the moon, but just because I got a call in regardless, you know, right. whether I was doing predator hunts, like tournaments or doing hunts now, I got a call in regardless. But, yeah, obviously there's an impact on them, you yeah. know, when they can, you know. But from my end, it's like, hell, we're going hunting. So,
yeah. I mean, know. if you got a hunt plan, that doesn't matter, you know, especially if it's for a client.
I can tell you this, when there is a bright moon, it's always a great excuse for me. You know, it's that damn moon, but sometimes I get just so, especially in January, I hunt a lot in January because mm-hmm. my big game hunt season kind of slows down and usually do about 20 to 25 days of predator hunting with clients in January. And
nice.
And that sometimes it's just like, I'm not even outside of the weather forecast the night before. Mm-hmm. I don't pay attention to anything else. I mean, sometimes even my family, you know, because it's just like by day 15, you're kind of like just trying to get to shore. You know, you've hunted so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't do much. I think we had one client for predator hunting. So a lot of times it's a guy who comes for archery deer or something like that.
Yeah.
Archery javelina. And then either tags out or wants to, you know, do some predator hunting in between or whatever. And we'll do some. But I typically do most of my predator hunting from February to really till deer season starts again in August, because, you know, like I said, we do quite a bit. I don't do client trips,
yeah,
you know, past May, because yeah. you really don't have that. You got the first hour sure. in the morning, you know?
Yeah. 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 Especially Arizona, it's so hot, you know, I mean,
yeah.
And down the valley, it's even hotter than it is up here.
But yeah. It's brutal. It's yeah. brutal. So, yeah, let's jump into a couple stories and see, you know, see if we can pull something out of that.
Yeah, man. So actually, I got your message. I was reading over it just a little bit ago and wrote some stuff down. And, you know, I tried to pick some different scenarios, but I'll just go over, you know, one that I happened with a couple clients on a, it was a day that I called in 9 coyotes. It was the most coyotes I've called in this season. Mm-hmm. It was 9 coyotes in a day, and this kind of setting it up. It was the first stand of the morning. So it was, you know, we were about 10 minutes after, you know, daylight. Mm-hmm. And I called the area before, which I think is critical. If you have success in certain areas, you know, go back to those, maybe not, you know, that day or that year, but, you know, continue to go back there because there's predators there for a reason. So right. I've called this area, I think 3 times before, 2 times I've called in coyotes on it. First stand of the day, it's kind of like a rolling, it's probably about 2,500 foot in elevation, rolling desert, you know, sparse terrain, and set up on a little rolling ridge with this long little wash or drainage. And you can see the other rolling ridges out there, probably a half mile away. Mm-hmm. And it just looks like there should be coyotes, you know, a bobcat there or something. And both guys had rifles. The wind was kind of variable, which always freaks me out because I never know, you know, I always just tell the clients when you can feel the wind and it's shifty, be ready to shoot them as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know when they're going to get your wind. But you know, about 3 minutes in to the stand, calling with the Fox Pro, electronic call. I don't think I used any coyote vocals, just straight off, went straight to a distress sound. I think it was like Cottontail Duet or something like that. Played it straight through for about 3 minutes. Looked to the left and I caught a coyote coming out of that long drainage. Client wasn't set up looking right at it, and he wasn't, you know, it's very important to scan with your eyes,
right?
You know, left or right. You can get away with head movement, as you know. You just got to move nice and slow and don't, you know, be whipping your head around. And he caught the coyote finally, but then the coyote probably about 200 yards trotting. And I knew I could tell the coyote wanted to, he was trotting, but I could tell he was trying to trot to the wind. The wind had kind of switched, blowing a little bit to my left, which was the way the coyote was running. The coyote went in behind some Palo Verde trees. Mm-hmm. And by then the client finally saw it, but it was too late. He got behind the Palo Verde trees. We're about 3 minutes, 30 seconds in, call still going, but it's on low, I think. And, I knew we probably weren't going to get that coyote killed, but we were still trying to, you know, see if we could get him killed. I was still trying to get the client to get a lane and recognize that, hey, as soon as he sees him, he needs to kill him because of the wind. And then the client that was to the right, setting up, kind of watching the call, he shot, and there was a second coyote that come in from basically off to the right-hand side over the ridge. He shot the coyote at 30 yards right next to the call. And so, you know, we called for another probably 5 minutes after that. Never did see the coyote that winded us again. Didn't call any more coyotes in. Killed one coyote. Called in two, what we call, you know, split double. One at 3 minutes, one at 4 minutes. And kind of some of the things that I kind of took away from, you know, that stand looking back is, number one, it was a day after a good storm. So I knew. Mm-hmm. It started storming about 3 o'clock the day before and stormed until about 4 a.m.
Oh, you know,
the wind is blowing. Oh, yeah. It was one of those days. I hadn't called this area in about a year. I'd had success in there before. Like I said, this specific stand I'd set up, you know, a little bit different wind, a little bit different time of day before, but I've had some success in there before. So I know the, you know, coyotes like it. Well, we pulled up and stopped, you know, we were able to, you know, walk out kind of perfectly away from the vehicle to where we didn't drive through the area. So the area was somewhat, you know, basically sterile or, mm-hmm. you know, no human interference, nothing messing with those coyotes. The wind was light, so that was good. And obviously, you know, in my opinion, those coyotes were, you know, whether they would be together and they just happened to show up at the call, yeah, different times, or they were separate, they were out hunting, or out messing around or whatever. And, you know, I think, you know, kind of the keys was the storm. We knew the area and the area was sterile or, you know, kind of untouched and,
right.
you know, they were responsive. So, yeah.
I'm a big proponent in going back to the areas that you've had success, but having, like you said, having a good amount of time, and I'm not talking about a week or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. For me, I've always done a minimum of 3 months, but I like to have 6 months to a year in between stands, and I just keep rotating those. And when I do that, I always feel like I don't really keep stats like that anymore, but I know when I did, like, I would call those like 100% spots. Like if I hadn't been in there in 6 months, that's, you know, and I've had success there before, those are the times that you know something's going to come in.
Yeah, I think longer is always better. You know, more time is always better.
Right.
In between, because, you know, you don't know what exactly is going on. You don't, you know, you go in an area, like I've been determined. I've called this, it's funny that we talk about this topic, but I've called this one area to probably like 3 times in the last month. Not just one stand, but the area, and I've had a lot of success in it. Well, I just went out the other day for myself, and I called in one, and I ended up missing the coyote, which pissed me off. But because, you know, I'd actually missed a couple clients. One time I didn't call in anything, but the wind was bad. And then as far as it was just blowing, and then the other two trips, some of the exact stands, but general areas. And I'm talking just an area where you do 3 or 4 stands,
mm-hmm.
And called in coyotes with the clients. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go back because they missed. I'm going to go back and I'm going to call this coyote. So I'm just going to see how much I can get away with, just kind of experiment to myself.
Okay.
But I think the one thing is more time is better. Like you're saying, I think that's a great rule of thumb. I think it depends on coyote density,
mm-hmm.
You know, also the area. Is it an area where, you know, and we don't know all this, but, you know, so that's why more time is better. But is it an area that, you know, an area where a territories come together, so these coyotes put up with, and you can get different coyotes from different groups, mm-hmm. or pairs in there. So all those things kind of roll through my mind. But more time is better. You know, I've called the same stand back-to-back days, but right. Sometimes it's the weather, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously if you go in and kill, if you're in an area of, you know, where there was just 2 coyotes and you go in and kill one or both of those coyotes, it may take it 6-8 months, a year, 2 years to replenish, you know? So yeah, no, more time is better.
Yeah. I think some of that has to do with, like you were starting to hit on it, like transition zones.
Yeah.
Where coyotes are just traveling, those are the ones that you can hit, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they're just going through, and you're just happen to catch, and, you know.
Yep.
It's a different
coyote. If we just knew where everything was. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. It's not as easy as.
No, it's not.
As like say deer or elk, you know.
You know,
you just follow the feed or the topography. I mean, some of it's the same. You know, you guys got to look at it with a different, you know, different perspective, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do have some of those spots where I know it doesn't really matter how long I wait. You know, it's just, if there's a coyote traveling through there, he's going to come, you know, come check out what's screaming over there.
For sure.
But for the most part, I think at least on my Onyx, all the spots that I've marked, those are all like, okay, this is a known hunting spot, or this is a known where they live, you know, they're here within X amount of distance from this spot, you know. And like you said earlier, coyotes, you know, if there's a coyote in there, there's something about that area that it's attractive to coyotes. So if you kill that one, eventually there's going to be another one to take its spot.
Yep. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. So... real quick question about that stand. How far do you keep your call out from when you know guys are hunting with rifles? How far out from you?
Well, it depends. It depends on obviously what weapons we're hunting with.
Right.
Depends on the wind. And I will tell you this with clients, it also depends on how good the clients are.
Yeah.
You know, so it varies anywhere. I would say typically speaking, you know, anywhere from, if we don't have a shotgun on the stand, mm-hmm. anywhere from 15 to probably 50 yards.
Okay.
If we have a shotgun on the stand, anywhere from, you know, 10 to maybe even 5 yards, maybe 25 yards.
Wow.
And some of it depends on wind. If I'm trying to hunt stuff crosswind a little bit, I like to give them a little bit more distance. So you know, get that wind. And same with bobcats. Like I like to be a little bit further from the call if I can get up, you know what I mean? But you know, in some of this country, you can't get up, you know, it's close encounter stuff.
Yeah. One of the guys that I kind of learned from a little bit, he would walk that thing out there like 100 yards every time. Had a lot of success that way. But you know, for me, I mostly bow hunt them, or if I'm not bow hunting, shotgun. So
you're trying to bring them in close.
Yeah, I do 15 to 20 yards is kind of my. Yeah. I need that to get drawn back. So too close is not good for me. I was just curious because I remember, you know, that vividly, that he was mostly a rifle hunter and he would always just walk it out. We joked around about having a mechanism that would shoot the call out there and retrieve the call back so we didn't have to walk out 100 yards and come back and put all that scent and motion out there and whatever.
Yeah, it also depends, you know, if it's dead quiet too or if there's not a lot of cover, you want to be putting it out there 100 yards, you know what I mean? So there's variables, but I would say on average, you know, 30, 40 yards, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's hit another one of your stories.
So kind of the next one, it's a bobcat story. So it was with two clients and again, it was after a storm. We called some coyotes earlier in the day. And then we kind of started getting windy, so we worked up into the strains, and they didn't really care what we were calling. So as it got windy, I'm like, well, we'll duck up this big canyon, and we'll call up there, and surely we'll get a fox, or, you know, we might pick up a coyote that's living up there, staying up there out of the wind, possibly a bobcat. And first day, we set up and didn't call anything in, but I saw a coyote, I saw fox, and then I saw a bobcat scratch, and I saw tracks. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of at the mouth of the big canyon. And then we went on up and called again, kind of towards the back of the canyon, and nothing. So we came back out, and we'd called kind of the flats before the mouth of the canyon. Well, there was a water just after the mouth of the canyon, and it was probably about 3:30 in the afternoon. And I'd called this area before, but I called it differently. We parked at the water, and then we walked out and around this ridge, and we had all these rolling breaks, and the main part of the mountain was to our right, and it was just light wind. It was just perfect. That area, I knew there was a rough road over there, but we didn't drive it, and more than likely, nobody else was driving it either. Mm-hmm. So I went and stuck the call down the wash, probably 50 yards from us. We were setting up high, both rifles, both guys had rifles. And my thought was, I actually turned to one of the clients. I said, if we can't call a coyote or bobcat in here, we suck. And it was just perfect. You know, it was 5 mile an hour winds, right to left. And I just thought too, after we called that canyon, saw that fresh cat sign, I knew we'd called before this stand, and I knew we'd called two sets after it. So it was kind of like one of those, he's got to be in here somewhere, or, you know, more than likely something's here. Mm-hmm. And I think it was CF Cottontail on the Fox Pro, and it was a minute 30 seconds in, I saw one of the clients kind of look in his rifle scope, but I thought, well, he's got something coming. And 15 seconds go by, and then I'm finally able to see, I see something running. Straight towards the call, and it's out there probably 250 yards. And at first I thought it was a coyote. It was a bobcat, and it's a tom bobcat, and he's just trotting in. And he makes it to the edge of the wash, and I could have called him probably all the way up to 50 yards, but I didn't want him getting too close and then get underneath us to where, you know, we had trees around us to where it was going to be a little bit more hectic for them to get a shot. So he kind of jumped up on some rocks, stopped, and looked at the client, said, kill him, and he killed him. And you know, kind of the takeaways from that, from my end, was obviously there was a storm the night before, there again, mm-hmm. You know, the common denominator. There was fresh sign, you know, in the area, like, especially for a cat, there was seen a scratch, And then I'd cut Bobcat tracks, whether or not this was the Bobcat or not, I'd cut Bob tracks on both stands in there. And that area, even though we drove past it, the direction we were calling was all basically untouched, sterile. And there was a lot of breaks. Time of day also, you know, 3:30 in the afternoon, that cat was probably laid up somewhere near the base of the main mountain or on the main mountain, but it had moved off of it to, you know, start hunting for the afternoon. I'm guessing.
Right.
Man, he responded like a coyote come trotting in.
That's awesome.
So
I don't think I've ever had a bobcat come running.
Yeah, he was, and it's funny, we just talked about that because these guys were from Kentucky and they've called some cats there. One guy's like, yeah, I've only had one bobcat trot in, and the other guy's like, yeah, I remember that one. And they were kind of debating, and then it wasn't, you know, an hour and a half later, here comes this bobcat running in. And I will say this, that he was the fastest I've ever called in the bobcat, and he, as far as shortest amount of time. And he was the fastest I've ever seen a bobcat run to a call. You know, it took me a second to figure out his gait wasn't the same as a coyote. He was running so quick. Right. And it was just one of those deals. He wasn't full. His belly was really lean. So, you know, he probably hadn't eaten 48 hours or so. So yeah,
he was hungry.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. Yeah. I would say most of the bobcats I've ever, I don't know. I don't usually call them and open stuff anyway that I can really see them coming from that far. So maybe they've ran and then, you know, stalked in the rest. But for the most part, it's always been, you know, hell, half the time they look like they're stalking, you know, like really stalking or something that isn't screaming, you know?
And yeah.
But yeah, they usually come in real cautious and quiet or sit there behind a bush forever. You don't even know they're there, and you go to stand up to go get the call and you go see them running off. That'd be cool. I'd like to get one to come flying in like a coyote.
Yeah, it was pretty neat to watch. I wish I'd have filmed it, but I didn't take my camera that day.
Yeah. So definitely another common denominator, if you haven't picked this up, that Craig keeps talking about is having a sterile or untouched, you know, very low impact, you know, way of getting in and out, not alerting animals that humans are in there. I've been a huge proponent of that for forever, ever, ever, ever.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, you just want to put the odds in your favor as much as possible. Not that you can't call them in when you drive through an area or I mean, there's
guys calling right from the truck all the time, but
it absolutely happens. But for me, I want to put the odds in my favor.
Same here. I tell people I treat it like I'm going to hunt whitetail deer out of a tree stand, you know, trying to be scent free, trying to use the wind, trying to not make noise, not skylining myself, none of that stuff. I feel like the more effort that I put into those, you know, each stand is, I usually get more of a return, you know?
Yeah. I guess I don't worry about like the scent free as much. I mean, I shower normally. I worry, and I don't, you know, I worry about the skyline stuff to a limit. I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think you can overanalyze stuff to a point of you get diminishing returns by,
for sure,
you know, kind of being over critical of your actions, you know. And we're a little bit spoiled because we can call so much different country. So you can, you know, mess up a spot and then you have 10 more spots to go call. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't make it sound like I'm completely OCD about it, but I do spend quite a bit of effort in, you know, concealment all the way around. But, question I had about that story, how far apart were your stands?
So funny, I knew you were going to ask this on this one. So probably I'll just start from the stand that was before that. That stand was probably about 800 yards before that on the same road, but the call was we were actually facing a different direction and calling a different drainage. Mm-hmm. And then we skipped that stand. I almost called it, but I didn't because of the wind. I went past it, probably another 800 yards, called into the canyon, didn't call anything in there, back to the truck, drove up the road, probably another 1,000 yards, mm-hmm. called the back of the canyon, and then we came back out, and then we hit the one spot that I didn't think we covered, and we pointed the call towards where we could, the direction that, you know, we hadn't called into. So, you know, I guess, you know, that's kind of a little bit of a distance barometer for you.
Oh yeah. That's perfect.
I'll do that with coyotes too, but more so I'll do it more with cats is like, you know, trying to hunt them up. You know, if I've got a lot of cat sign, is like, gosh, there's got to be a cat in here somewhere because there's just too much sign. And maybe I'm just not close enough for them to respond. You know? So,
yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, but from my experience I'm saying this from my experience, when I've glassed up bobcats that I know they're within earshot, mm-hmm. I've never been able to call one in when it's that far away. So I feel like, not like coyotes, if they can hear it, they're going to come. Like, but for the most part,
I have my next story will challenge that theory.
Okay.
So just, good. I mean, just to bring it up, because I wanted to throw a different one. So this one was after a storm again, and you see the theory there.
Right.
It wasn't by choice. These guys just hunted a few days where it was kind of slow. We got a storm system. I said, oh, maybe we'll take this little route that I haven't done in a year, and we'll hit it up. Cause I'm always had, it's not an area where I call a bunch of coyotes, but it's usually consistent. I'm usually getting clients on 4 to 6 in there in a day, you know? So, first stand, we drive up a wash, we get out, we're in some rollers. It's very, very desolate, deserty country, rolling ridges. We set up, the wind kind of had me a little bit in a weird position. We set up, we had kind of a bigger mountain in front of us out about 150 yards. We got one shotgun, one rifle. Mm-hmm. And, I think I howled, got some coyotes to respond back and to my right. And, they weren't the direction that we're kind of sitting for. They were actually across the wash that the truck was parked in, but the truck was back down the road. I continued to call for another 5 minutes, and then I shit canned the stand, just said, stop. And so we went back down the truck, and I'm like, okay, like, all right, no, maybe we called. We called for 7-8 minutes after we heard them. Okay. Nothing came. So then I shit canned the stand. I'm like, I'm not going to call for another 6-7 minutes. We're going to stop. We're going to drive around, and we're going to reset up on them. Because they didn't come over the ridge, at least to my knowledge that I could see. And I didn't like the way the wind was blowing. So we drove around them and, got to where I thought we were probably within a half mile, maybe 600 yards of where they called. And we popped up over a ridge, walked up the ridge, and we had some rollers in between us. So we couldn't see down in this little bit of a valley, that they were in, which I kind of like because we were, you know, didn't expose ourselves to them. Mm-hmm. Set the call down, had the guy with the rifle facing the wind that's going downwind on the right, and there's kind of a drainage over there, a wash. And then the guy with the shotgun's closer to the call, about 20 yards from it. He's got a big ridge to his left that the top of the ridge is probably about 80 yards. About 2 minutes in, all I did was I played Raven for 2 minutes. And about 2 minutes in, I see Norm with the shotgun kind of squirming. I look up, there's a big male coyote running, but he's running to the left. He's not going to the wind. He's running to the left, which is opposite of the wind, but he's going to get elevation. Mm-hmm. He goes up on top of that big ridge. When he gets up on top of that big ridge, and then he starts to break over, he makes it about 10 yards and then just puts on the brake, sees the hunter. Hunter pulls up, shoots at him at 70 yards. Coyote runs off. Mm. I immediately hit some coyote sounds. Play them for about 2 minutes. We catch another coyote, crossing the wash to the right. Eric does. He doesn't get a shot at him. I know that coyote's going to the wind. I switch sounds again to another coyote sound. He pops up over the next ridge. Now he's about 250 yards. I happen to look to my left, and I see another coyote at about 100 yards. So then Eric's trying to shoot this coyote that's 250 yards, and I'm like, Eric, left, left. Because obviously we'd much rather shoot the coyote that is at 100 yards.
Yep.
And so he turns left. Coyote almost gets out on us. I switch coyote sounds again. He stops in the wash. Boom, he shoots him, kills him 130, 140 yards, something like that. And that was that. We, you know, basically it was about 8-9 minutes of calling or so. And, you know, I guess kind of my point to that is two things. I knew the area really well. There again, just like what we kind of highlighted at the beginning, I knew the area really well, and I hadn't called it in a year, but I've had previous success on not that stand that we called those in, but the first stand that where we were set up, but the wind was a little bit different. And then they were in a different spot. The coyotes were back to the right. They're normally, when I'm had success on that stand, they're normally straight in front of us or straight north of us on that first stand, but they were to our right. And I don't know if they came in, hit the wind. I don't think they did. I just don't think they came. They were stuck over there in that little area for whatever reason. They didn't want to come out of there. I don't know why. Now, I didn't give it another 15 minutes because I didn't like the wind either.
Right.
Once I heard them, I'm like, shit, you're going to have to be on your game to get them killed. And if they do come in, because more than likely they're going to start hitting the wind at about 300 yards. So when we backed out, we got closer, we tucked in tight. There again, the area, in my opinion, other than they obviously heard us on the first stand because, you know, they responded. But the area, once we tucked back around, we kind of went back into them, got closer. Mm-hmm. We still hadn't drove through there. They still didn't know it was humans, you know, right, that was on that stand. They were responding to a coyote sound. And for whatever reason, we didn't bring them in any closer on that first stand. So I think it was knew the area, knew that coyotes lived there. It was after a storm, so they were ready to roll. And then, you know, the area again was sterile. So that's what it keeps coming back to, you know.
It's a good recipe for success, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't always work, but
no, I mean, I'm sure there is no 100% in predator call in my, you know, my opinion. But no, that's all stuff that I definitely agree with, and I think people should, you know, that are listening should adapt into their skill set for sure. So, well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing those stories with us and you know, some of your, like I said, the nuances and of your tactics and what you do. It's always refreshing to hear somebody who kind of thinks, I mean, I feel like you think a lot, well, at least from what I've heard from you anyway, you think a lot like me. So it kind of just makes me feel good that I'm doing something right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a client this year. There's kind of two other guys that have done a lot of hunts for me, and then me, and then we got another new guy that does some hunts too. And one client's hunted with all three of us, kind of guys that have been doing it for a little while. And
nice.
He's like, well, you guys, one of you does this and one of you does this. And it comes down to, you have to do what feels right for you. Mm-hmm. As long as like 80 to 90% of the stuff, the core stuff is there. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different ways of, you know, getting, you know, for lack of better terms, that cake or that steak to taste good. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not one recipe to success. As long as those cores are there, you know what I mean? That's how you set yourself up to succeed. And I think that's what you're getting at with, you know, the core values as far as after a storm, culinary, as you know, sterile area, all that stuff. Because 100%, I get guys all the time, the first thing they want to know is the sound. And I'm like, a distress sound. Like, that's a, and yeah, don't get me wrong.
Work better than others. Yeah, we have our
favorites. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think if you get a coyote that's hungry, and he hasn't been bothered, and you're set close enough, you could play a baby crying and then he's going to come in. Yep. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So anyways, but I appreciate it, John. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Why don't you give us a quick, where listeners can find out, follow your stuff there.
So the best way to follow me, I guess, is probably Instagram. Craig Steele AZ is my handle there. And you can pretty much email me, call me from there at any time. You can go to our predator hunting website, predatorexclusives.com. You can email me there as well. And so, yeah, pretty easy. You can find me on Facebook and YouTube as well. But Instagram's probably the easiest, and predatorexclusives.com.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, John.
Right, bye-bye. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com, and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.